Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Well, I'm delighted to be joined now by Sean Hogan's grandson. That's Tracy Hogan. Tracy, good morning to you.
Good morning, Fran.
And a real pleasure to talk to you today. How do you feel listening to that song about...
It was quite emotional, actually, listening to it, Fran, and thank you for having me on. It's an honour and a privilege. And it was quite emotional listening to it. It's a beautiful song and a beautiful rendition by Deirdre and lovely lyrics by Seamus, the melody. It's terrific, actually. Very easy listening, but it's brilliantly sung. And it's a lovely tribute to my grandfather, and the family would be very proud of it, actually.
I'm sure they are, indeed. Tell me about what do you remember of your grandfather, Tracy?
Well, I was quite young when he passed away, Fran, so I would have been about 11 at the time. But I remember him. He lived in Selbridge in Knocklong House, yes. And afterwards he lived in at number 18 North Great Georgia Street. It was an old tenement building. It's all been beautifully restored now, but I remember it as an old tenement building, and it was it's actually the house that Senator David Norris actually lives in now, and it's. Yeah, I remember him. We lived out in Sutton in a kind of an old farmhouse, if you like. And he used to come out on the bus to see us. And I remember him as being a big man, but a tall man. But he wasn't that tall. But when you're 11 years of age, he seemed quite tall. He was very friendly. Took a shine to me. But he was kind of, there was a sort of a distance about him. And my mother used to say that he could come and he'd come to our house in Sutton. And he'd turn dinner and he'd come in and sit down and he'd go for a walk out the back into the garden. And then he could just go walk away. My mother would send me out looking for him. Papa Hogan was what I called him.
Yeah.
I'd go out and get Papa Hogan. And I'd go out and he wouldn't be there. He just would have just disappeared, gone up the road, got on the bus and gone without saying goodbye or anything like that. So obviously the events of the War of Independence affected him deeply, and he carried those kind of mental scars, I think, with him all his life, and he found it difficult to sustain relationships with his wife, obviously Christina, from whom he separated, and his three sons, my father, Hugh, and his two brothers, Sean and Tom.
And I was going to ask you about that, Tracy, the relationship with your father and Sean Hogan, his father. What was that like, or did your dad talk to you about that?
Yeah, he did. He did. I think he found it difficult, but the bond was strong with all his boys. And we used to go to visit him in Selbridge. But my most vivid memories were not of Selbridge, because he lived in the Knocklong house there. It was a farmhouse that was built. And then he lost that, and then he was staying in this flat in inner city Dublin. And it was a big contrast from where he would have stayed, because, I mean, he went from Green Ann, the family farm outside Tipperary town, to after later on in life, he went to Mead, and then to a farmhouse there, and then to another farmhouse in Selbridge in County Kildare, and then ended his days in a very small room in a tenement building in inner city Dublin. And that's how I remember him. My father and myself would he'd drive into town on a Saturday, and we'd go into this building, and it was pitch dark inside, and there'd be a couple of bicycles in the shed, and there was an elderly woman there who used to kind of keep an eye on the place. But there were lots of families living there, and this was back in the 60s, so all these places were populated then. They were pretty, poor conditions, really, I suppose. But I remember going up the stairs, a big roundy stairs of what once would have been a fine Edwardian house. And we used to, but now converted into tenement buildings and families living in each of the rooms. And Sean lived on the very, very top one. You got all the way to the top stairs, and then there was another little stairs, and I always remember little creaky stairs, and that led to his room when you went in. And when you went in, when he went in the room, there was a kind of there was a bed up on the left hand side, then a small kitchen, and then he had a kind of a desk, a writing desk, and on that he had a whip, and he had binoculars and racing tickets, because he used to love going to the races and horses and horse breeding and horse racing. That was one of his big passions in later life. And then on the map, over that, I remember vividly seeing this map of Ireland, an ancient map of Hibernia, and a few books. He always had a copy of Dan Breen's book, My Fight for Irish Freedom, at hand, because obviously he featured quite prominently in that. But then other times I remember him, my father would go off and do whatever he had to do, maybe tour checking and work or something like that. He worked in the Irish Press advertising section across in Burkey on the other side of the River Liffey. And then myself and Papa Hogan, as I called him, he'd take me by the hand and we'd walk down. I was maybe in the Scouts or something like that, so there's no Scout shop in Moore Street, and he'd bring him these sweets, and he'd always have a firm grip on my hand. And I remember him being always, he would have been like only in his 60s, like I am now, but he was always dressed dapper. He'd always have the suit and tie and the Crombie overcoat and the hat, kind of, you know, the Trilby hat cocked jauntily to the side, and immaculately dressed. That was of their generation, I suppose.
Of course, yeah.
But I remember him, yeah, I do. And I remember when he died, my father and my...
He died outside of the house there, didn't he?
I beg your pardon?
He died outside of the house, the tenement building there.
Well, he didn't, yeah, not really. He took ill there.
He took ill there, I beg your pardon, yes.
He took ill there, and then he was brought down to Jervis Street Hospital, which was quite close, I suppose, and he passed away there just Christmas Eve, just before Christmas Eve in 1968. But I remember going down to the funeral in Tipperary Town and St. Michael's Cemetery, and the rain, I never saw anything like the rain. I was sitting in the back of my father's car, because my other grandfather, my mother's father, Maurice Brennan, who was also in the 1916 Rising and also involved in the War of Independence, the two of them drove down. I sat in the back. I was the only one who went down to the family, because I was the oldest, but their children were quite small at the time. And I remember the rain. I remember carrying them out and the flag draped over the coffin. But I just never forget the rain. It was just one of those things you remember, I suppose. It being Christmas, I suppose, as well, Christmas Eve and the rain. But I always remember he was a kindly man. He gave me a few little things. I still have a little folder of memorabilia, I suppose you'd call it, from him. It contains his medal from the War of Independence.
And did he speak to you about Solihull, for example? Did he ever speak to you about that? No.
Not really, no.
You were too young, I suppose.
I was too young, but also my father used to tell me that he rarely spoke about it.
Yeah.
Very, very rarely. Even to him and to his other brother, Sean and Tom. Tom lived in emigration to Australia. Sean died reasonably recently, and I had many conversations with Sean about him, and he said he was a hard man to talk about stuff like that. He would converse all right, but he'd be a bit hurling or anything really about the war. He became a closed book for him, really. I suppose that what we would call it now, post-traumatic stress, kicked in, and there was no counselling available for that generation. And he just kind of, it was a chapter of his life that affected him deeply, scarred him deeply, and he just rarely spoke about it or attended events in Tipperary, like the Solihull Beg commemoration or Knocklong. He used to go to Martin Savage commemoration in Dublin. Martin Savage is one of the men who took part in the ambush of Lord French. Cavalcade in the Phoenix Park with Sean and Dan Breen, but he was killed. He's the only one killed in that, and he affected him deeply as well. My father said that was the big thing that affected him more than anything else, was the death of...
Because the friendship among those men, I mean, his friendship with Dan Breen was right up to the end, wasn't it?
To
his deathbed, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And he also had a deep friendship with Seamus Robinson
as
well.
Yes, of course, yes.
And he stayed in Seamus's house in... I spoke with Seamus's daughter about this. He stayed in Seamus's house in Ratgar for months on end in the early 60s, so they remember him vividly, and they had a great time for him. He was very convivial, but again, kind of, there was that bit of remoteness to him. But I think it was a very, very difficult time for these guys who took part. And I mean, there were farm boys from Tipperary who were thrown in at 17 and 18 and 19. Sean was only just turned 18. And, you know, if you imagine an 18-year-old experiencing the events that he experienced, you know, being on the run, being sentenced or being brought to Dublin, where he would have faced almost certain execution, the escape, being shot, the handcuffs, the trauma of the incidents, and then being on the run and being involved in all the episodes during the War of Independence. So they took a heavy price for the, you know, the freedom that they gave us, I suppose.
Do you think they were looked after as they should have been? Do you think?
No, I don't. I don't actually. And if you read John Connors, I know you had John on yesterday. Yeah. John's a good friend of mine and an excellent historian. And his book, Sean Hogan, His Life, A Troubled Journey, is an excellent biography
of Sean.
It's a marvelous book, and it really gives an insight, and it's forensic detail and attention to fact as opposed to anything else. John's book is to be commended, and it's a great tribute to my grandfather, and it's shared regularly around our family, and I recommend it to anybody to get their hands on it. Apart from being my grandfather, it's about the life and times of these guys in Tipperary during the War of Independence, the Big Four, and so on. But I think they weren't looked after. Sean had to struggle to get his pension, for instance, and they had to be intercession by Seamus Robinson, Dan Breen, and others, because Sean fell in hard times in later life. And
they had to convince pen pushers that they deserved this, which I find
absolutely
amazing.
But you see, you have to remember who won the Civil War, if you like.
Of course, yes.
You know, and that's terrible. But that's the guys that they fell out with, and they were on the anti-treaty side.
Yes.
And after the government was formed, they were really seen as being on the other side. So the army, if you like, were in charge of pensions, and the army were, seen as pro-treaty as they were. And there was that kind of resentment that lingered on for years after the Civil War. So it was they were all on the Republican side. So it was difficult, and I don't think they were treated very well, really, even under De Valera's government. And there was no respect for them, I don't think, among their peers, I'm sure, and among the general public. But officialdom, I don't think, recognised them.
And just finally, Tracy, if I could, I mean, you know, this centenary decade that we're going through at the moment, do you think that history is treating them a little better now?
It is, but I still think I'll put it this way: if this was, say, in the United States or in any other country, there would have been, this is a bugbear of mine, and I know it is with John Connors as well. You look at Solihull Beg, you look at Knocklong, and these were the really seminal places in the War of Independence. If this was any other country, Knocklong will be preserved. There would be like an interpretive centre. There would be regular official tours. The whole place will be sealed off as a place, as a battle site, a historic battle site. And same with Knocklong. There would be millions invested in these places for tourism, and more importantly for preserving the memory and honouring the memory of the men and women who were involved in this. But the 100-year celebration for 1919 at Solihull Beg, the government sent a junior minister down to attend the commemoration, because I think there was a kind of a softly approach.
Absolutely, and I was going to say that, is there almost an embarrassment?
No, I don't say embarrassment. I think it's politically correct that's gone mad.
Yes.
And really, it's politically correct that's gone mad. And it just dishonours the memory of the men and women like my grandfather, like Dan Breen, like Seamus Robinson, like Sean Tracy, Dinny Lacey, and also the RIC men involved in that as well, who lost their lives. I mean, it just doesn't commemorate them, and it's not doing anybody a service, and I think it's wrong. There should be more investment and more appreciation and more understanding. But you see Solihull, you drive by Solihull Beg, the site, or Knocklong, and you wouldn't really know, wow, this is a place of massive historic importance.
Unless you knew, you wouldn't know.
No, you wouldn't even know it. You'd be a tourist and say, I wonder what's this about. This should be like... They're up there with there should be, as I say, interpretive centres, guides. Solihull Beg and Knocklong are national treasures, and they're not recognised by successive governments. And I think that's wrong. It's a disgrace, actually, and it should be rectified immediately.
Tracy, it was a real pleasure to talk to you today, and really grateful that you could come on with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Fran. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Good luck to the song. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye to you now, Tracy. Bye-bye. That's Tracy Hogan there, the grandson of the great Sean Hogan. And before that, we heard that wonderful song from Seamus, sung beautifully by Deirdre Scanlon there as well. All right, we'll take a break back in a moment.
Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.